Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
I do my show on the Heritage Radio Network because I think it's important to talk about the impact of technology on our lives.
I do my show to reach home cooks and help them do better.
I love getting together with people in the industry.
I like hosting my show because, to me, it's the stories about people and their relationship to food that help make the food more interesting and more delicious.
Our hosts do their shows as a labor of love, but we still need your financial support in order to keep the lights on and keep the tape rolling. Please become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thank you. Snacky Tunes. We are in the, I don't even know what part of Grand Central Market this is.
This is the secret office.
The secret office of Grand Central Market. We're here with Sarah Kramer and Sarah Hymanson of Mad Capra. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Really happy
Thanks
to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for opening up what is maybe one of, if not the best falafel place downtown and in the greater parts.
Let's hope that's the case.
I hope that's the case. Certainly, at least downtown.
You never know once you get to like the weird, like more like smaller ethnic pockets of
totally.
Of LA.
Well, we like to think we do something different.
Yeah, we're a slightly different breed of falafel place, but you know, we like to put ourselves in a slightly different category because we think the two are just like not exactly comparable. But we love old school falafel.
Oh yeah. What do you consider old school falafel?
Like your classic. Greasy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, pita pocket, yeah. Cucumbers, tahini.
Tomato, lettuce, a lot of lettuce, or like purple cabbage. Oasis.
No, Oasis. That's like a little bit, that's not quite classic.
I think it's pretty classic.
No, for those who
or
don't
like
know.
Like here, Arox, like falafel Arox.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Pickles.
Yeah, some stuff.
So, like me, you two are New York transplants.
We are.
And you two both started, well, not like me, but you two both started in fine dining.
Yeah, I certainly did. You started a little bit more casual than went fine.
Yep.
But we both worked at Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns.
And different times.
Different times. It was actually my first cooking job 10 years ago at Stone Barns right out of culinary school.
And I initially worked at this place called Applewood. In Park Slope, which is now closed. It was open for 10 years.
Wow.
Very, very seasonal. But you know what?
Maybe time.
Time. I just talked to the chef yesterday about it.
Are there times, I mean, when restaurants, like, it's still loved, it still does well, but it's time to close it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was, like, this chef had moved away from the city, and he was trying to run it a little bit from afar, and it ran its course. It was a great, like, beloved restaurant, and 10 years is a long time.
It's a long time.
Time
it's a good
to
stretch.
Move on.
And also, if it doesn't like make sense with your personal lifestyle anymore and like where you're at in your own life, and you have to like make sure that that's all in line.
You know, that's an interesting point of just, you know, especially from what your backgrounds are in fine dining, but opening up this more casual falafel restaurant, and then also with Glasserie and other restaurants under your belts, how much of the restaurant needs to be who you are?
I think the quality
really suffers if it isn't. And you can see very clearly when restaurants are open and they're a shell instead of filled with someone's, sounds sort of cheesy, but like without a soul.
Yeah, where someone goes like, I've never made pizza, but I'm going to open up a pizza restaurant.
Yeah, that or like when someone does have soul in the beginning and then, you know, either they like lose it over time because of, you know, apathy or distance, or whether they lose it over time because they've gotten too big, you know, and they've like kind of moved on from their location, and you see that lack, I think, at a certain point, unless you're able to like really maintain it in a way, like
put really good people in place who share your vision and integrity.
That's the goal.
Is it so authenticity, integrity, all
yeah.
of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think authentic to who we are. I think we would never claim authenticity, like, as a, like, food concept or as, like, a sense of place, except within the concept of, like, who we are, the vision we want to see come alive, and, you know, how we want it to exist in the world and, you know, what we espouse to believe.
So when you say authentic to who you are, is that different than, like, an authentic interpretation of a dish?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Totally.
Definitely. Authenticity of a dish is, I don't even know what that means anymore.
Sure.
And it's definitely not anything that we would tie ourselves to or strive for.
It's just not our style. Yeah, it's not our style. I think that, like, people see authenticity in different ways based on their own upbringings and based on their place in the world. And I think that Sarah and I both feel like we don't come from a place with, like, a lot of, like, authentic food traditions. I certainly feel like I don't.
No, I definitely don't.
And we kind of use that to our advantage. We, like, are able to take things that are traditional and turn them into something that we, you know, think has ours. A place in the world and feels like, yeah, is our interpretation of whatever that thing is, or, you know.
That, and that is authenticity for us, is
trying to pursue the things that we really believe in and really, we really want, both on, like, the actual, like, dish and flavor and food front, and on, like, the sourcing front. That's, like, a really big thing for us.
Oh, so how did you two meet?
We met quite a few years ago now, actually.
I know, it's crazy now.
I talk about it as this was a hard moment in my life. I had been working for a few years at this restaurant in Park Slope, this place called Applewood, and I was in a relationship and I was trying to have a more sustainable life. The person I was with was not in the restaurant industry, and I was just trying to be involved in food in a different way. And I briefly, for maybe 2 months, worked at the Brooklyn Kitchen, and I was just miserable. I was like, felt like I was sacrificing my life. It was just horrible. I was very angry.
And I was working at the Meat Hook, which at the time was inside of the Brooklyn Kitchen.
Right.
And like, I didn't know Sarah. We had just barely met, and like, just in passing, we were kind of in two different like parts of this shared space. And I didn't know that she was a cook at all. Like, I didn't know she had any cooking background.
But I think I told you that I was.
I don't think you did. I genuinely don't think you did. Anyway, there's clearly some nebulous memories happening here.
I just wanted to be seen.
She just wanted a lot of, you know, recognition from me, and I did not give it to her. But honestly,
like,
there was like a two-week period that we, like, crossed paths. It was, like, so short.
It was very short.
She was, like, pricing things in the back room, and I was, like, cutting cases of cabbage.
Right.
And
it was, like, not a fun time.
It wasn't the most fun for either of us. And then when you were leaving to go work at Blue Hill, where Sarah knew I had already worked, she, like, came up to me, and she was like, oh, hey, I'm going to go work at Blue Hill. And I was like, good luck.
And I was like, she's a fucking bitch.
And I was like, genuinely, I had no idea that she had any cooking experience. I was like, I can't believe you're going to go work there because it's really hard. And I was like, that's a bold move. It wasn't meant to be dickish. I was just like, you're going to need that luck.
And then did you two keep in touch, or did you run into each other?
No. And then I worked at Blue Hill.
I mean, you just heard what she said about me.
Yeah.
Sarah had been and was working in the Andrew Tarlow world.
Shout out to Andrew Tarlow.
Shout out.
I love Andrew. I don't know how he does it.
He's incredible.
Like, with, like, the restaurants and the kids.
Oh, he's
always
a magician.
Looking dapper. Yeah. Like, he might have a secret twin.
He's got magic.
He might have, like, a secret, like, stunt double.
He also has his wife, who's amazing.
Yeah, he has his wife.
Kate is, like, she's got her shit sewed together.
And yeah, but I love
perfect
that
little
man.
Family.
But I knew a bunch of people also at that point in the Andrew Tarlow world, and
a lot of crossover, a lot of friend crossover.
So I, like, worked at Blue Hill for a while, and then I opened Mission Chinese.
You also, like, heard more about me at Blue Hill as well when you were working there.
Yes. Only positive things.
Only positive.
So you two were, from afar, able to move forward from...
Truly, I never even thought about her again.
And so then how did you connect in a way that you were like, we're not only can we be friends, but we can be partners?
Well, then years later...
After I opened Glassery.
Hands down, still, best rap dish of all time.
Thank you.
Very, very delicious.
And you made promises that it might come back to LA in some form.
It might come back to LA in some form.
Yes.
We're going to talk
about it. It will.
Yeah. We can get there.
We can get there. But so then you two reconnected.
Right. Well,
She came in to eat. Yeah. She wanted to size me up.
I was like, oh, Sarah Kramer opened a restaurant. No. I was like, done a bunch of traveling, and I came back to New York, and I was like, where am I going to work now? Like, Gramercy Tavern or...
Glassery.
You
know, two things that are on the same level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I went in, I ate a Glassery, and I really loved the food. I really felt connected to it, to the voice, Sarah's culinary voice.
So sweet when you say things like that.
Anyway, someone who had worked at the Brooklyn Kitchen was a server at Glassery, and he recognized me, and he was like, hey, Sarah.
And he told me, he was like, do you remember that girl, Sarah, who worked at the Brooklyn Kitchen? And I was like, I don't think so. And then she walked into the kitchen after her meal. I mean, I treated her nicely because, you know, Kendall recognized her.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, yeah, I think maybe. I was like, circus girl, right? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, cool. And so then after her meal, she came into the kitchen, and I was like, of course. And she's like, look, I'm so cute. And I was like, oh, we can be friends now.
Awesome.
Yeah, and she was also like telling me that she was looking for a job, and then I like immediately set to trying to convince her with like every fiber of my being
to work.
Yeah, to work with me, because I was like desperate. I had had already like 2 sous chefs. This was like in 3 months. I was on my 3rd sous chef. I had like the first one after one day, like get arrested and never show up again. And the second one was like pretty old and like really not.
Dyer.
Yeah, it was dire. He's like pretty old. Not that there's anything wrong with like people who are a little bit older working in the industry. I feel like we're getting there ourselves. Yeah. But he just like was an old dog and like not really having it. And
not hip to the
not hip to the scene.
Yeah. And but I like was desperate. It was like me in the beginning when my sous chef quit. It was like me, this guy Kelvin, who is like a legend in the Brooklyn food scene as it, or the greater New York food scene as it is, and you know, that's like a whole other interview just talking about
Kelvin.
And this guy, Kenji, who is like an artist, prep cook, dishwasher, and then he would also like do salads, so like,
and he lived like an hour away.
And he lived like an hour away, and he was like Eeyore. And he would, for the first few weeks while I was like really trying to figure it out, he would like go between the dish pit and the salad station, and I was like doing half GM and expo on the saute station, just like it was miserable. It was crazy, and it's like a pretty big restaurant, you know, and it was a lot. So I like was in desperate need, and Sarah saved me.
Awesome.
And that lasted a few months, and then
it was a very sad moment when I heard that things were changing at class. Or
it was a sad moment.
We gotta go.
Yeah.
And is that when you both decided that it was time to go to leave the town and to go to start going to LA?
Yeah, I mean, we like we were considering our options. I think we were also like forming the idea of working together as partners and what our next move really was going to be. And
but it was generally, I would say, it was a quick decision.
Yeah.
I think for a moment we were like, well, do we stay in Brooklyn?
I mean, I left Glassery in March.
And I left like a few weeks later.
Yeah. And then we moved here in
July.
I mean, I left Brooklyn at the end of May, like May 31st or whatever. Wow. It was like my last day in Brooklyn.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear a song from Helios and the Savoir Faire, and then we're going to talk about your move to LA and then getting started.
Cool.
And the LA food scene.
Great.
You are here with the Sarahs. People refer to you as that?
Yeah.
All the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the
but
time.
But one is an H and one is no H. Yeah.
Correct, but you can, you know, parenthesize it.
Yeah, I see it. Here on Snacky Jeans.
Snacky Tooth. In fire, I'm feeling you tonight.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Have Sarah and Sarah of Mad Capra here in LA at the famous, infamous Grand Central Market.
You and can get famous.
And famous. I think it's one of those two places that gets both famous and infamous.
I think
it had some infamous years. As downtown LA. So you two moved out here about a year and a half ago?
2 years ago.
Two years ago. And did you have the idea to open up this restaurant and even in this location before you moved out here, or was it...
Yeah.
You came out, I mean...
Yes, kind of. We'll give you the quick rundown. We, like, did a kind of crazy thing right before we left New York. It was May 2014. And we did an Aesop collaborative dinner at Bon Appetit magazine in like their test kitchen, and they were like, "Do you have news for us?" They like wanted it to be like a press event in addition to it being this dinner there. And we were like, "Well, I guess we could announce that we're gonna open a place in LA.
It's gonna be a falafel shop and a restaurant."
Yeah, we like just announced we were opening like either two restaurants or like a tandem concept restaurant.
Which was the original idea.
The original idea was like a falafel shop restaurant combination.
So sort of like a secret hidden falafel restaurant.
Not like... secret exactly, but more like Roberta's Pizza Kitchen kind of combo, you know.
More like sure. Casual in the front, a little bit more like a mullet, like
casual in the front, party in the back.
Yeah, okay. I got you.
Business in the front.
Yeah.
I think business in the front.
Yes.
A little bit of a reverse mullet.
Yes. Exactly.
Some kind of a mullet.
So you announced it, and then you're like, oh shit, we sort of just threw down the gauntlet.
Well, yeah, we were like, we gotta just decide what we're doing and then do it.
We were also just like, totally down to be like, this is what we're doing, and just make it happen.
So how did you decide on not only the final concept, but how did the partnership with Grand Central Market happen?
So they actually, when we announced that, they actually reached out to us, and I don't know if it was like a direct like causality, but I think someone had heard that we were moving here and wanted to open a falafel shop, and Kevin West, the guy who like helps bring in the new tenants and like curate the market,
sure.
He heard about us through this food friend of his, who I assume heard that we were moving to LA because of this press.
And they... had a they, concept of they, space in the market that they that was going to be available.
They wanted a falafel place, and they wanted they were like talking apparently to someone else, we don't really know who, but when they heard about us they like were pretty aggressive and interested, and we were moving from New York, and obviously we had heard about Grand Central Market, and we thought really hard for a while, for a few months, on whether it was the right move. You know, there's a lot of contract negotiation with this place. Mm-hmm. And I think we were, like, back and forth a lot on whether it was the right decision for us. But LA is it's a fickle town, and, like, choosing location here is not easy, especially if you aren't very familiar with it. And we recognized that at that time. We were like, we don't know LA well enough. It's pretty
clear that there are people eating food in this space.
Yeah.
Totally. And also it like dropped us into this really great community. It dropped us into like some visibility really quickly. It was, we think still to this day, a great decision. And we're really happy to be a part of Grand Central Market, and it's been really good to us.
So what was it like opening up? Well, let's actually talk before opening up, but how did you two decide officially that you two are going to be restaurant partners?
I think we just liked working with each other at Glassery. I think we did anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, we wanted to keep working with each other. And I think that the only way to do that is to, you know, form a partnership. It's like Sarah and I are on very similar levels. I happened to get a restaurant opportunity to be the chef of first, but that's all kind of like circumstantial and doesn't speak to our individual abilities. And I think that we just wanted to pursue and see. You know, I think we have a good creative rapport.
I also think that intellectually a partnership was appealing to us in terms of sustainability and collaborative potential.
Yeah, and like, yeah, sustainability is kind of a big one in terms of choosing a partnership over like the glory of like going it alone.
I think going it alone is sort of for suckers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
and
very lonely.
And it's lonely, and like as much work as a partnership takes, it's like, you know,
it takes a lot of work.
It does take a lot of work.
It takes a lot of work.
Anyone who has a partner.
But it's also like way more rewarding, and it's really nice to share the experience with someone.
It's great. Now, seeing how none of you did any stages at Oasis or Moods or things like that.
You don't know that.
Did you?
No.
Okay. How did you pick falafel? Like, what made you go down that route? Oh.
So, Glassery was, like, Middle Eastern inspired in concept. And so I think that we both thought it would be a good idea for us to continue pursuing kind of the Middle Eastern avenue. There's so much within this, like,
larger cuisine.
Yeah, larger cuisine. It's like a giant geographical area, and there's just a lot to explore and a lot to discover. And we were trying to think about a casual concept that would make sense, that we could open and it could be manageable, and falafel really made sense.
But I would also say that we are very much a non-traditional falafel shop, and I don't think there are other people that are doing that. So that was exciting for us.
Non-traditional.
The potential.
Can you give an example of the non-traditional?
Sure. I mean, we make our bread, which, like, most people don't. There are some places. I know there's, like, a place on Atlantic that does it in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But that's the only place I can really think of.
So we make our bread, but I would say that
and like
Our flavor combinations are non-traditional. Like, we do a sandwich that has fennel seed labneh and grilled cauliflower and pickled fennel and lots of mint and cilantro.
Right. We do one that's like spiced carrots with like a walnut yogurt and dill. You know, it's just like not traditional combinations. We just wanted to like have it all be much fresher as well. We like really focused on the texture and the quality of our falafel. We use organic, locally sourced chickpeas, which is like not traditional at all in terms of, you know, how people think about falafel as well. People think of it as like a cheap street food, and you know, our food isn't cheap, and we don't want it to be, truthfully. I mean, we like totally respect that kind of falafel and that kind of approach to dining and to food. Like, we like see that place and we eat that way also, but in terms of like furthering the vision of like what we want to see in the world, like, we want to source our product really well. We want to support people we respect, and you know, want to continue pushing the culinary world forward. And I think that there's so much potential in the fast casual world to incorporate like higher ideals of cuisine and higher ideals of sustainability and sourcing, that it felt like a really like good big opportunity for us to be able to do that.
And so, with over a year under your belt, how do you feel that people have responded to that?
I think really well.
Yeah, definitely really well. This market is interesting also because it really serves the cafeteria for people that work in downtown. So I think that we also get a lot of people that aren't thinking that hard about what it is that we're doing, who are just like, oh, great, a vegetarian option.
Sure.
Or like, oh, that place is good.
Totally. It's cool for us to get people who stumble upon us, and we do a lot.
I would say that is most of our daytime business.
Yeah, and like people, like a lot of repeat business from the people who work in the neighborhood. But it's nice that we get a pretty diverse cross-section of customers, and not just people. Like, if we had opened in Silver Lake Echo Park or something, or Los Feliz, where our new restaurant's going to be, I think that it would have been much more of like a place that people knew that they were coming to, as opposed to a place that like people find because they're in the market.
Right, right. Now, you have another project coming up with these two up-and-comers, John and Vinny. Guys to watch. I think they might do some good stuff.
I mean, we'll see.
We'll see. And this takes you over to a little bit more closer to where my wife and I live.
Yes. Great news.
On the east side.
Yeah.
So what's this project going to be? And you're also near one of the best restaurants out there as well, which is Homestay.
We're on the same block.
I know.
It's awesome. And we love Homestay. We love Brianna. Good block. And
Homestay.
I want a chicken sandwich right now.
Oh man, you want to talk about just
Awesome. We could like have a whole episode of just us talking about her food.
It's really good. They're opening up another location as well.
Yeah.
So what is, can you announce, do you know what the name of the restaurant is?
It's called Kismet.
Okay.
And it should be opening this fall. Knocking on wood or whatever material this is.
Plastic. Plastic deposit. And how did that come about?
Well,
also very organically.
Very organically, for sure. We, pretty much like right after moving here, Vinny actually reached out via Instagram. I think that he had heard about Glossary, was kind of following that story a little bit, and reached out on Instagram when he saw, like, I posted something from, like, Koreatown, because that's where I live, and he was like, oh, you live here now, and was like, let's get breakfast, and, like, super cool of him, like, this, like, really well-known chef dude just, like, reaching out to
Of course.
Me. So that's, like, so Vinny's...
He's, like, the biggest-hearted and wonderful.
So nice guy.
And so he and I got breakfast, and he, you know, we were, like, having a very nice conversation. He was like, you guys should come in and do a friend's dinner. Yeah, like a dinner with friends pop-up thing in Animal. So we scheduled that, and they hosted us for a one-night pop-up that went super well, and, like, same night, John was like, you guys want to open up a restaurant with us? And we're like,
Yeah, sure.
We were like, we had also been thinking about a lot of other partnerships, and then when this was an opportunity, very easily, we were like, this is right.
Yeah. I mean, we had definitely, like, had a lot of other things kind of come our way, and, like, a lot of things that we were debating, and this felt way more natural.
And so what's the premise going to be, or the approach?
So it'll be also kind of Middle East, Mediterranean inspired in terms of, like, the flavors. It's going to be an all-day restaurant, so breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which is a beast, but also very exciting in terms of servicing the neighborhood, which we're, like, super happy to be, like, a neighborhood hub.
Yeah.
And also because that block is going to be so great, it's going to be, like, really nice to, like, be open all day with our neighbors who are there, like, Go Get 'Em Tiger is opening there. I don't know if it's going to be Go Get 'Em or if it's going to be a GMB, but...
It's going to be a Go Get 'Em.
Go Get 'Em. And Home State, Bar Covell, there's going to be a McConnell's Ice Cream, and then the Silver Lake Music Conservatory is right next to it.
So awesome. So
it's a great block. And so it's going to feel like really a home. And it's going to be sharing-oriented for the most part, especially at dinner. I think a little less so during the day, but...
Lots of vegetables.
Lots of vegetables.
Yeah.
Pretty fresh, pretty light.
Awesome.
Fun, yeah.
Bustling,
fun, hopefully.
I'm sure it will be. Listen, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Where can people find more info about Mad Capra? Instagram?
Instagram's great. We're at Mad Capra LA. Try spelling it. But our website is also madcapra.com, madcapra.com.
And then Kismet also.
And Kismet,
stay tuned.
Yeah. Kismet Los Angeles.
Awesome.
On Instagram.
Well, very excited about it, and I can't wait to eat maybe the rabbit dish.
Maybe the rabbit dish.
It could happen. And if not all the time, then maybe it's a special. We have a track from Porches coming up here.
Love Porches.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
I was in... My wife and I were on our honeymoon, and we were flying back. We were in Tokyo at the Narita Airport, and they were playing a track in the airport.
That's so cool.
I know. And it was like... Because, you know, you spend the whole time, you, like, you hear music out when you're in another country, you're like, I don't know anything else, it's like Black Eyed Peas or something like that. And then to be like, wait, what?
Yeah, who got to choose the music today?
I don't know.
And they've made it.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's awesome news.
But yeah, but shout out to Porches here on Saki Tunes.
I couldn't help from noticing you across the bar. Hello, I'm running, I'm falling apart. Do you want me bad like I want you? You said I'm Edith and I've always been a mess. Well, nice to meet you, maybe we'll undress. But we we could just slide down. We both could use the rest of. So I hold on, I hold on to a dimwit cigarette, and I take a deep breath, 'cause I know you can. And I fell to greatness when I laid within your grassy realm. Crawled across the floor to a patched up helm. Your hips the balmy swell in porno hell. And I said, hey, would you wanna join the loner metal band? And you said maybe we could just hold hands. Well, if that's the only place they'd land, I die a happy boy. So I hold on, I hold on to a dimwit cigarette, and I take a deep breath, 'cause I know. I know you can.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Cameron Orr, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
One of the things I liked when kind of reading up about you is that you had to make like a crucial decision about which instrument to pursue when you were in college. How did you choose between the violin and the piano? Or how did you come to deciding to go with the violin?
I don't know. I think at that point it was just felt like more of a... By that time it just felt like more of a soul instrument, I guess.
A soul instrument?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I always really liked, I guess the thing that I had liked about piano is the big sound that you could get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, the fullness of the chords and everything like that. But I guess by the time I got to the end of high school, I guess I just felt like violin was more of like a singing instrument, so I think that's probably why.
I think you can definitely determine someone's personality by how they play the violin and a bit of who they are, what they feel, more than some other instruments.
Cool. Yeah.
And so as you kind of moved into the piano, I know that you also incorporated like different pedals and looping, so like how did you come across that and how did you work that into, you know, your classical training?
I think it's, well, two things. I think it's somewhere in the back of my mind. I remember a good friend of mine that had, in college, like, show me Andrew Bird stuff. And I think that got stowed away somewhere, for sure. But actually getting into the pedal things was, something that happened, I guess, after college and just kind of, through a series of life events. So the first thing was, I guess I had gotten some pedals just to affect the sound a little bit when I started doing jazz in the end, at the end of college. The two pedals that I had gotten first were, I guess, reverb and delay. But delay has that looping feature on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was definitely, you know, playing around with that. And sometimes just for practice, like, you know, lay down a bass line or whatever and then improvise over the changes. But that was kind of the first playing around with it. But I think also just appealed to me because harmony always has been a big thing for me, especially like playing piano and stuff and playing around with chords. So, I didn't actually get an actual looping pedal for a long time, but definitely it was like, oh man, it'd be cool, because also the delay features are so cool. It'd be cool if I could, you know, use both. And not only that, like, because I was doing jazz at the time, a lot of heads are longer than the 40 seconds that mm-hmm. your
right.
Delay pedal gives you. So that was like a thing. And then after college, this is after college. This is in my, I guess maybe my second year teaching or something. So after college, I was teaching in the public schools as a music teacher for like 3 years. I think in the second year or something. A woman, Emily, had reached out to me. Who you know, now is a good friend, but at that time was kind of like out of the blue, she was looking for a violinist to incorporate into her band, called Emily Danger, and she had got my name from an ex-boyfriend that I'd done some like gigs and stuff with. So anyway, so I ended up playing with her and guys adding more effects, I forget at what point I got the loop pedal, but definitely was thinking about, you know, using that in the context of the band, just to fill out the sound more. And for a while I was a little sort of confused by it. Mainly I couldn't figure out how to erase stuff. So
this won't stop.
So I finally consulted the manual in, you know, a fit of desperation, and it was a pretty simple fix.
You're like, if I only had some tool to teach me how to do this. No.
Let's hear a song.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear something with the loop pedal.
Cool.
What are you gonna play?
So I'm gonna play a tune called Solidarity. So I had a couple of years ago this show at, about 2 years ago at Rockwood Music Hall, and basically this was towards the beginning of the Fight for 15, which is a movement to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour mm-hmm. and get everybody in a union and stuff like that. So this had gone out to them, and so it's kind of been a dedication piece since then, so... Thank you.
So there's a strong link between music and activism in your work, especially with the last piece you played. How do you balance it, and, you know, what lessons do you learn in kind of, you know, it becoming off as a way to get your message through and, you know, using music as the medium?
So that's something that I'm still trying to kind of figure out, because they all take a lot of time. None of those things are necessarily things that pay very well, so then you also still have to figure out where your money is coming from. So I don't know, it's definitely a balance that I'm still trying to figure out, but what I've been doing lately is just kind of basically at shows, just saying a little bit about giving a piece off to, you know, some particular struggle that's going on, and try to, you know, give a plug as to how people could get involved with that. But I think definitely, you know, being involved myself is an important part of that, you know, because talking about these things, whether it's a struggle for, you know, fair wages or for racial justice or, you know, defending democratic rights and stuff like that, no matter what it is, it's like calling attention to the issues is important, but also with that, like, also need action. So I guess, yeah, just using it as a medium, not only to talk about things going on, but encouraging people to actually, you know, get plugged in somewhere and doing some work would be good.
And how much do you, when you find that balance, does it inspire certain pieces that you're writing? Like, especially the piece you just played, how does the inspiration of, you know, $15 minimum wage, like the different, like, song structure, balance, mood, things like that in your song?
I think it's less, it's not so much like, and I have tried to do this, it doesn't always, and it hasn't worked, at least not yet, is to actually, like, try to write a piece for something.
Sure.
It's more like I have these songs, and then as I'm playing them, because I'm also, just because of busking, like, I'm playing them, like, almost, like, you know, 3-4 times a week or whatever. So then as I'm playing it, I'll have images coming to mind, you know, or thoughts or whatever, and it just, at some point, I feel like there's a connection. And also, especially because most of my stuff doesn't really have lyrics, so it's more of just like a feeling, and usually that connection comes after the song already exists. But
yeah. That's great. Can we hear another song?
Yeah.
What are you gonna play?
So this is a tune called AstroTurf. This one actually has a title, and this is this is just a typical love lost song. But there's no, you could look up the lyrics. They're like on my site or Tumblr or whatever, you can find them, but I don't really sing them. But anyway. So this is AstroTurf. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome. So what do you have coming up? What's the rest of your summer look like?
In terms of music stuff, I'm doing a show at Rockwood Music Hall on September 3rd at 9, I believe. I have to check that time again. In terms of the rest of my life, I guess just trying to stay alive. And then also, if people feel like getting involved, I've also been part of an effort to organize peace vigils around the city in response to the ongoing police violence and stuff like that. And basically, a lot of people are talking about how, we need more than spontaneous responses to incidents of violence and stuff. We need kind of more of a sustained strategy and stuff like that. So it's kind of part of an effort to do that. You could get involved at bit.do/peacevigil and basically sign up. So doing that, and then also be going down to Richmond, Virginia on August 12th and 13th, where low-wage workers will be developing a platform going forward for the 5 for 15, which is, not only fighting for union rights and better wages, but also been involved with fighting for immigration justice and racial justice and fighting for affordable child care and affordable housing, stuff like that, all the things that affect all of us. August 12th and 13th, be in Richmond, Virginia for that, and there's buses going down. You can get involved with that too if you feel like. But anyway, so there's some things going on with me, and then besides that, just basically trying to keep food in my mouth.
I hear you, man. Well, listen,
last question though. Yeah. Favorite place to busk? Most receptive.
I like Skirmerhorn a lot, actually. It's you don't get a whole lot of competition. It's kind of hard to get on the metropolitan spot in the G sometimes.
Yeah.
It's been a cool spot for me. I also play at Atlantic Barclays a lot. The BQ is a pretty resonant platform. Those are some of my.
Dave the Engineer approves.
Say it again.
Dave the Engineer approves. Yeah. Cool. Well, where can people find your music? You already announced where you can get more of your activism work, but where can people find your music? Find you. We're busking.
Yeah.
Put food in your mouth.
It's CameronOrMusic.com, or it's 2 R's. All my contact info and shows and stuff. And
awesome. So we want to make sure that we get one last song in, but thank you to the fine people at Heritage. Anna, Meatball, Mom, Dad, Ornella, everyone. Appreciate it. What song are you going to take us out with?
I'm going to do our covers okay?
Yeah.
Covers are okay. Great.
So I'm going to do a cover of a Radiohead tune called Subterranean Homesick Aliens.
Perfect. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. Thank you.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.